Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. My name's Wendy, and this podcast will help you invest in houses of multiple occupation. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whittaker-Large, and this week I'm really delighted to have a very special guest on who has been incredibly busy over the last week, and in a minute he's going to explain why. So I'm really pleased that we have Van Vogstad on the podcast today, the founder of Coho, a fantastic platform if you are managing or renting out HMOs. And I'm really pleased that Van could make it today, because I half thought, Van, that you might be still either fast asleep or lying down in a darkened room somewhere.
Yeah, I literally haven't stopped since Friday, but no, I wouldn't miss this. So thanks for having me on here again.
You're very welcome.
It's been a good couple of years.
Tell us, Van, if people have been themselves out to darkest Timbuktu and haven't been around, perhaps they don't know what happened on Friday, but what was last Friday all about?
So on Friday, we ran the first ever HMO Awards. So HMO Awards 2022, that was a time to celebrate, learn, grow. Basically, the event for HMO managers and investors to all come together from all around the country, and they absolutely did. There was some from Scotland, some from Cornwall, literally everywhere. Two people flew in, all come together, meet each other, because, I mean, for the most part, we've all kind of spoke online and interacted, but actually a lot of us haven't met each other. And it was just an incredible, incredible day.
Amazing, amazing. And how many people did you have at the event?
So there was 400. I would say we sold out, but to be honest, we kind of forgot to turn off ticket sales. But because of the whole train strike, we sort of thought it would kind of even itself out. So we've kind of just been saying there's about 400, we think, give or take five either side.
Well, I was absolutely gutted that I couldn't attend, because I did my back in earlier that day. I would have been with you celebrating, enjoying the wonderful event at Stowe School, which looked like an incredible venue. And I was absolutely gutted that I had to miss the event because of, you know, injury. So next year, Van, it's in my calendar. Just send me the date as soon as you can and I'll make sure I'll be there. But from what I've seen, it looked like it was a very, very well attended event. And not only that, but you had some very interesting speakers, because could you tell us a little bit about how you structured the day? It's a bit different to many other kind of award ceremonies that I've been to.
Yeah. So the whole thing is, we Coho, we're not a media company. We don't sort of do these things on a regular basis to make money. To be completely honest, we had anticipated a £10,000 or £20,000 cost to us for the whole event. And it's just because we felt the industry needed this event. We could have thrown a load of money at Google and Facebook to advertise and do what normal businesses did, but that's not how we want to operate and how I think modern businesses operate. We wanted to sort of give back to the area we operate in. So the way the day was formatted. It started out around the idea of the awards. So my issue with everything is HMOs just get such a bad rep. And when I'm telling people I make software for HMOs, often, you know, their mind right away has gone to what they've seen in the local newspapers. But what they're not seeing is all of the incredible ones. No one's phoning in the local newspaper and saying, a six-bed HMO's popped up next door and there's an accountant, a doctor, a school teacher, and they even put my bin out the other day. it doesn't sell papers. It doesn't get clicks. But that's what people are creating, these incredible things. But they're so busy doing it, they're not shouting about it that much. So we wanted to be there to help them shout about it, to help them get the word out. So it started out as the idea of the awards. And it's not just about who makes the most money on a deal. It's about who's creating sustainable, good products, whether through design, supply, investments. So we covered 18 different categories that we felt was good across the board. And that did include things like social housing. And there was some kickback to that, because social housing and HMOs, that is kind of where it gets the most grimy at times with the local news, for one. But there were also incredible people doing incredible things in that space, and that also needed celebrating. So yes, it started out with the idea of the awards, but it would be a wasted time just to get everyone over just to clap some people who are picking up an award. So what we wanted to do was to make the day of it. And that started off with 12 absolutely incredible talks. So I don't know if I've just got a short attention span, but when I've gone to property networking sessions, the talks are usually an hour-ish sort of long. And I went to one at the start of the year, and I was sat next to somebody who had the notepad out, and it was an hour-long talk. And I was more interested in what they're taking away from it, because it was about investment, which I'm useless at. I mean, I run a startup. That's pretty much as bad as you can get. I hope none of our investors are listening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. Be careful what you say.
Well, all of my eggs are in one basket. I'll say that. But I was watching this lady with her notepad, and across an hour talk, there was probably two or three things that she wrote down. And it wasn't that like 20 minutes led up to this one thing. It was just something the speaker said resonated with her. And she thought, actually, that's something I can take away from this. And that made me think, actually, could that person have condensed that talk to 15 minutes where they got those two or three things out? So I went to who I consider the people that I respect most in the industry for what they do. And I asked them if they could do a 15-minute talk that had very clear takeaways, with the idea that basically if everybody sat there with a notepad and they leave and compared notes, they've all got the same three things written down. And that was quite nerve-wracking for some of the speakers who are used to doing the longer ones, who maybe couldn't take their normal slides. But with how special the day was, they were well up for that challenge. There was no kickback there. They loved the idea of doing that. So we split it into two rooms. One was the management room, talking about the day-to-day, how to make an HMO business succeed. And the other was the sort of investment-y room, which is more about creating the product. And that was for sort of like 2.5 hours of the day. And I anticipated that those rooms were going to be mostly empty, because, you know, these are all people coming together meeting for the first time. So I thought the networking space in between, which was ridiculously impressive in how it looks, but I thought that was going to be the busy part. And I went around awkwardly going, talks are starting. I don't know if you want to go, but the talks are starting. The room just cleared. The talk rooms were completely packed with people standing up and people trying to get in midway. So that was really good. If anything, it made people turning up just after the talk start wonder if they were the only people here. So that's a learning to go from it.
And can you tell us what kind of topics or covers? You split them into a management or a sort of investing stream. And then within those two kind of streams, what were the topics that people were talking about?
So things like Caroline Pattinson opened up the management room talking about how to get tenants on your side early on and influence the culture of the house to keep people longer and to keep people happy and to create that social responsibility inside the house. And then, as you'll know, in the other room, we had Darren talking about how to protect themselves, to protect yourselves from the council tax rebanding. You know, an incredibly important topic. Mm-hmm. Then it went on to things like we had Jordi Pasqualin from Built Asset Management talking about how he scaled the business from, well, essentially the journey from 120 to 1,200 rooms and the things that had to be in mind in that journey and what he wished he knew. I won't go through all of them, but Matt Baker talking about why branding is important for a property business. Just some absolutely incredible talks covering all aspects of it. I basically had a wish list of things that I wanted to be talked about and just found the person that was perfect for that.
And what kind of feedback did you get from the audience?
I've only heard really good things from the talks, apart from next time put more chairs in the room. but yeah, I think like some people were saying with Jordi's talk, for example, you know, they really are on a different level to a lot of people, and the things that they're thinking about that allowed them to get there, you know, they're things that you can take away and put into your business today. Just really great feedback, because these are some of the best speakers in the industry, like Stuart Scott talking about the top three design techniques. Andy Graham talking about what he's learned from all of the people in the industry that he's worked with.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, you did certainly have a very, very good cross-section of the community. Not everybody was there, though, that I would have expected. There were a few faces missing. So maybe next year, Val, we can make sure that we kind of, you know, widen the net a little bit and get those other people in who weren't able to be there this year.
Yeah, I mean, there was... there's always a backlash when someone says there's going to be awards, because it's like people here, they're not doing it to get a pat on the back. And then also people think that different things are valued, which was why I found it really important to have things like the Rent to Rent Master Lease Award and the social housing and things like that. But I did try to sort of fight the battle quite early on and just be really upfront and say, like, this isn't just to give you a pat on the back. This is to basically show everybody else, like, what this industry is capable of. So, yeah, I really hope the people that maybe didn't think it was an event worth coming to next year will think, actually, this has been really good for the whole industry. And
I totally agree. Well, I think it's not just about people looking at it and thinking they didn't want to come. I spoke to a few people who didn't even know about it. So once I told them about it, I sent them the link and I hoped they would book tickets. But I just think it's one of those that's going to build and build, and where you can do more promotion maybe a little bit earlier and get more people. I think that nowadays we kind of rely a lot on social media, don't we, to spread the word. But actually, there's quite a few HMO investors I know who aren't even on social media. So how do we get that message out to them? And I know that you've done this in, did you do this in partnership with the HMO magazine? Were they of your promotion team?
Cuthbert did a great job trying to get the word out to more people.
Yeah, great stuff. Excellent. Okay, so moving on from the awards then, which was obviously a highlight of this year. Mm-hmm. Tell me what else has been going on in the world of Coho this year, because it's been quite an exciting year for the business, hasn't it?
It has been, yeah. I mean, the speed that we're moving at is intense. I mean, when you're on an airplane, it may feel slow because, you know, you're on there the whole time. But in reality, when I look at where we're going to and the features we're adding, only 2 years in, I'm massively proud of the team that we have and what we're achieving. We did another venture capital investment round at the in the summer. And also something I'm really pleased with, again, half of that raise came from our customers, which is just very, very endearing. It's really nice to know that people are not only using the product and enjoying it, but actually want to get behind us.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff, isn't it? If you know that your customers are actually part of your shareholders as well.
Yeah. I mean, where we are now, I don't think there are many HMO managers that haven't started taking a look at what we can do and whether we can help them. I know our sales team are really busy at the moment. And I think that's just, yeah, it's been nice. It's a hard journey building any software because, you know, we're the new guys on the block. We're probably sort of 10 years behind some of the other companies that are in the space, but we really care about HMOs. Like, that is the bit that we're trying to do right. And I feel like I have to say this anyway, but we also do single lets, but HMOs is what we're really like. We're really trying to get right where we think other people haven't done it right. And although it may feel like we're playing catch up with some of these companies, in reality, we're not. We see ourselves as doing something a bit different. We're trying to put everything in one place and start to automate it. And I think the issue that we face from that is at times it feels a bit like we're like Netflix, where it's what you want when you want it without adverts. And we're trying to convince people away from their Virgin TV package. And then we'll sometimes get questions like, does it have the Discovery Channel? It's like, no, we're doing something different. We're trying to offer a different experience where it does all come together and basically like offer the tools that we think HMO managers need, not just offer property tools that HMO managers can also use if they maybe make a few little tweaks.
So, yeah, interesting. And what's the process that Coho is using to decide which features to integrate and decide which ones not to use? Because I suspect you get lots and lots of suggestions all the time about things you could put into your software.
We do, yeah. And I think early on we didn't always land exactly on the biggest problems. We always knew that HMO managers needed more time. So automation and information was absolutely key. But we are really like, we really talk to our community. Every user comes into our Discord channel. You know, there's a load of people in there now, and we listen to what they're saying, and we try and find out not only what they want, but why they want it. So we've often heard a lot of people say, we need automated bank feeds. But what I've tried to say is you don't need automated bank feeds. Like, what is it that the automated bank feeds are trying to do for you? And then it actually boils down to, we want rent to automatically be marked off without us having to do anything. You know, that then's the answer. You don't want to have to handle the rent reconciliation process. So like, that's one of the things that's now our biggest focus. Last month, we launched our client accounting module for it. It's a whole financial module. So if you're a landlord, if you're a rent-to-rent person or an agent, you can use this module and it will help you understand profitability and create settlements. And what we're doing now is layering on those automations on top to automate all the rent reconciliation, automate the settlement generation and the disbursement of funds. And then also like, have this all actually powered by like the maintenance module, which we're currently overhauling. So you bring the suppliers in, they upload the invoice, and it goes directly into all of that. So yeah, I think to answer your question, it's all about really talking to the community and understanding the community, and not just the property world as a whole, but like understanding the problems that HMO managers have, because that's where it's like the melting pot of managing property. Like, if it works for an HMO manager, it will work for single let managers.
Your software is called Coho, which obviously gives the impression that it's about co-living HMOs, as opposed to there are other pieces of software where they've got different names. I'm not going to name them here today, but you've got competitors in the marketplace, which I know you're fully aware of. Why would you say that Coho is different from those other packages? What is it that it offers that is kind of unique and different?
Yeah, so to go on the name, I don't know if many people will know this. So it's it came from, I used to use spare room as a tenant, and I always found it quite annoying that I don't want a spare room. I'm looking for like a shared house. I'm looking for a co-home. So I basically took the first two letters of each word.
Put it together and presto. Hey, presto.
I think it was my wife that was like, call it Coho. So what's it doing that's different? So I think ultimately what I heard from quite a few people in the room on Friday and from our customers is that they've joined Coho because two things, really. First of all, they see us as the future. They need everything to be in one place without the duplication. We have customers that are using other property management software and PayProp, for example, and let's say GoodLord, for example. So they're onboarding with GoodLord, putting it into the property management software, and then they're using PayProp to handle some of the rent collection. But like, there's a lot of duplication going on between that, and you're throwing different tools in for your staff to learn. Now, we believe that bringing all that together is a bloody hard task, but when it's done, it will save time and it will generate information that you just would struggle to have got elsewhere because it was not well connected. So we have that vision to bring things into one place. And it's also that vision of being like a really modern tech business where we're not just creating a place for you to put your data, but we're trying to create a place that actually works for you, like that augments your abilities as a property manager to get things done. So I'd say that's the one thing. But then the other thing, and this is quite important to us as a company, people feel that we align with their values. And as a modern business, like, that is so important. Like, nowadays, it's hard just to run a business that doesn't have values and doesn't feel like it's giving back in some way. We feel about, like, we care about your customers. We don't want them to be subjected to bad software that was created for you. So we're creating that software with your customers in mind. Like, we want the first impressions to be, this is quite smooth. This is looking quite good. So yeah, we care about those end users, and we care about you as a customer. And I think it's that our vision of where shared living should be basically aligns with our customers' vision of where it should be. And I think that's something that no other software really is caring about that much at the moment. It's basically we want to offer the tools and the software, but I don't think many other people really see shared living as the future in the software space, but we do, and we want to kind of be alongside our customers as we kind of usher in this new era of shared living becoming pretty mainstream. And it is. I mean, if we look at the cost of living and if we look at like where inflation's going, it's difficult for people. And really, like, shared living is probably one of the best solutions solving quite a few problems that we're facing. Loneliness, the housing, obviously, but also things like the environment. You know, like, does it make sense to have six different people in six different apartments with six microwaves and six dishwashers? You know, all of those things. Like, shared living solves a lot of these problems, and we recognize that, and we want to be there alongside our customers who also recognize it and are at the forefront of solving those problems. So
I think that's great, and that's a very powerful reason to almost be part of the Coho family, because you have a bigger vision, and you, as you say, your values underpin that very, very strongly. So you've talked a little bit about some of the features that you're going to be working on over the next few months, and all of those features sound great. I certainly think that for a lot of people listening, that might have been one of the reasons why they might have evaluated the software and thought, no, it's not quite ready, because I do need these other features to be up and running. And certainly there are other software packages that you can use that have that already. But as you say, Van, there is a challenge very often in property management whereby you might have a piece of software that does 80 to 85% of what you need, but there's another 15% that you have to bolt on from somewhere else. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's always the frustration, is that you can't have everything all under one roof. But it might be that some of that is impossible to achieve all under one roof without millions of pounds of investment. So it's going to be a case of being savvy about what you can put in and what you should put in, really, isn't it?
I mean, what I'd say is that, like, almost, I want to say all of them, but I don't want to commit to that. I'd say almost all of our customers are absolutely loving being on the platform. Like, they wouldn't go elsewhere, I don't think. And they would evaluate other software and go, ah, but does it do this and does it do that? And like, so we do many things that they don't, like a lot of things. Like, we've basically built the whole onboarding process into it in a really nice way. There's things that we want to do to improve it, but there's so many features that we have. And actually, this is a failing of us as a company and something we're trying to address, but we have so many features that have a really low use because we don't tell people well enough about them. So we're very, very feature rich as a business. But the thing is, what we are recognizing is that people have a fear of the unknown. I mean, it's always scary to switch from some software to something else and relearn processes. And although our team tries to make it really easy by doing that whole migration, you still have to learn some new things, and the anxiety that comes with that, like, we recognize that. But we see it as there's two types of people. There's those who are happy with what they're doing, and they are happy just keep going along, they're successful, and they just want to keep that going. And then there are those that actively want to improve. They want to work on the business and not in it. They want to try and step away and be more strategic and really see that business grow. And as the industry grows, they want to be there to grab the ball by the horns and be at the forefront as it grows. And they're the ones who are the quickest at moving to Coho. They're willing to take on that little bit of pain of learning something new, maybe like losing one feature they like, but also gaining another feature that they are going to like. And you know, ultimately it's getting off the horse and getting into the car. You know the horse will travel over there at a certain speed, you know you're going to get there. But when you see this big scary car that someone's just invented, and you're sure your head's probably going to snap off when it starts going forward, but when you do it, you realize, actually, this is where I need to be, and this is where the future is. So yeah, I mean, the challenges we get is really just trying to show people that move over to the modern world, you know, let's go there together, hand in hand, and and smash the changes that need to happen as the society changes.
So thinking about the HMO industry now, what are your thoughts about the next year or so in terms of where you see the industry going? You're obviously very well connected. You've got lots of customers who are obviously running HMOs and single lets. So what can you tell me about what you see happening over the next year to 18 months?
So I think that, so in my view, the reason why the HMO industry is slowed down at the moment is because it's still not a product that tenants want. It's still a result of not being able to afford their own property. Not in all of the cases at all, but still from a majority of the people will first look at what's the cost of a flat in that area. And if they can't afford it, what else can they get? And I believe that the reason why that's still the problem is because the place that you find properties, I'll just say spare room, it's got the whole market. The place that you find properties, it is all about the location and the rent. It doesn't put much effort into who else lives in there, apart from a couple of bullet points to say two males, two females, you know, an age bracket. And somebody in shared living, one of the biggest factors to them is what the quality of life's going to be like in there. And one of the biggest factors to that is who else they're going to live with. So you really have to take a gamble when you live in a shared house. And some of the people that are doing it best, like Caroline Pattinson, for example, she's had people that are looking at single lets and looking at a shared house. And she's convinced them to actually want to live in a shared house because they've met the people in there and they enjoy it. Now, if I was now single all of a sudden with no kids, I would want to live in a shared house, but I'd be really, really nervous. I wouldn't live in one that I didn't know who I was going to live with. So I'd probably end up living on my own. And I'm an absolute advocate for this industry. So like what I would need to see is who else is living in there? Like, are they people that are kind of like me? Am I going to enjoy it? So that's to say that still isn't the norm. And that's what we're trying to do. We won't get into it, but that's what we're trying to push for. But while that's not the norm, what I think is going to happen over the next 18 months is a massive momentum was built up on Friday. Like, people are really recognizing what people can do and what they are doing. And I think that this is going to kind of start a race to the top. So people are going to see what others are doing and try and do better and try and like improve the offerings of their product. Like, there was a lot of inspiration people took from not only the people doing the talks, but just people in the room. Like, people actually found out that what they're doing is actually quite special, and they're doing some really interesting things. And they've told some people that they met some of their tricks and they learned some tricks. And as a result, everyone will do better. And I think that the outcome of that is we as a whole industry can start to respond to this negative image that's been thrust on us with, no, this is what it's like, and that is the exception. And I think over the next 18 months, that will increase. I think we'll start to see the reputation of HMOs increase. And as a result, we'll start to see more tenants want to live in it. In fact, little anecdote, I was speaking to a councillor in a council. They're currently pushing through Article 4 across the whole area. I invited the person who's pushing for that and one of his colleagues to the HMO Awards. They didn't come, but one of the colleague is an absolute advocate of shared living because her son is living in a shared house and thinks the landlord is brilliant, like does a great job making sure they're all okay. Her son really enjoys living in it. It's affordable. He has a good life in there. And I think it's just more of those anecdotes need to start spreading and basically kind of laying the path ready for the future where people actually think, do I want to spend that much money to live in a small one bed flat, or do I want to spend this much money to live in a really nice shared house? So that's a roundabout way of saying, I think it's going forward. I think there's not going to be any ridiculous big change, but I think it's moving in a really positive path.
So you want to see the I suppose the view, the position of HMOs change in the sense that the general public perhaps accept that they are actually a choice rather than a kind of backstop, and that if you're going to live in an HMO, it's not because you couldn't afford your own place, it's because you've chosen to live there.
Exactly, yeah. And I also want people in the industry to recognize that it's not all about design. Like only one of the categories, I think, at the awards was about design. It's about customer experience design. So it's about the life that people have in there. I think I've mentioned this to you before, but the HMO I lived in, it wasn't a really nice building. My parents sort of put the shoes on when they came in. I think it was not, you know, it's not like what you see on Instagram nowadays. And, you know, that's great. I'm really glad people are doing those products, but it is just about the service that people are offering and the situation they're creating in the house. So yeah, I'm not saying I think that things need to go to everybody doing these incredible renovations and designs, but people will recognize the service that they're offering and then just up that service, recognize that actually what they're offering is somewhere between a single let and a serviced accommodation. It's kind of like it is a service industry to a large extent.
So in terms of the challenges then, Van, because I think that, you know, a lot of what you're saying, I resonate with, I hear what you're saying, you know, but to me, it sounds a little bit like pie in the sky. Some of it I'm thinking, good grief, some of my tenants, you wouldn't want to live with them. They're dirty, they don't clear up after themselves, they don't look after the property, they're rude to other people. Mm. You know, and you don't always know when you rent a room to somebody that's how they're going to behave. On the surface of it, they look great, and you might do all of that introduction, and they love living there, and everybody else kind of is friendly to them, and the first couple of weeks everything is great, and then suddenly you start to hear from some of the other tenants, this person isn't tidying up after themselves, or they're a mess, or they're frying fish in the kitchen at 3 a.m. or whatever it is. I mean, those kind of people exist. Those people are in all communities, north and south, east and west. How can co-living or coho be the answer to those problems? Are you saying that suddenly we're going to eliminate those kind of tenants?
No, we're not. There's always a place and those people always need a house. But I think to draw an image of the industry based on what we currently have would be wrong. It'd be like kind of putting a 50p sandwich shop in the middle of a rich city and saying, oh, actually, all the people in this city aren't very well off at all. If the people that are attracted to shared living right now are attracted to it because it's significantly cheaper. And people aren't attracted to it because they know if they move into those properties, they're not going to be with like-minded people. So I think if we look at some people's portfolios that really sort of sell the lifestyle of it, they have very different tenants compared to someone who's selling the room. And people do need a room, so I'm not at all saying that's wrong. But I think there's a lot of money to be made from people who opt to live in shared living. I think you can get more rent per square meter, especially when you start to take, you know, the sort of like the middle of the market in and not the kind of just the lower income of the market, which I think for the most part, we're kind of still at that sort of lower income tenant. It just doesn't have to be the case. But I think the flaw would be designing the product around the current customer and ignoring that actually there's this massive customer base that if the product existed would come in. And you can see that at the higher end of the market, like some of the really successful property managers, they have created a product that stands out. It's still difficult for them because they're trying to attract a tenant who is still price conscious. And what we need to do is change the societal view of HMOs to make it away from being price conscious. And that isn't something that happens overnight at all. And you asked how Coho can do that. Well, I really, really believe we can do that. And the reason is what we're doing is when your properties come onto Coho and you invite your tenants to tenancies, we ask those tenants, just tell us a bit about yourself. Tell us a few interests you have, a job that you have. Write a little bit about yourself. maybe add a picture. It's up to you. Like, we don't force anything on anyone. But as a result, you create that little profile. So when people come to Coho to look for a shared house, they can see these people and they can go, actually, I think I'd like to live in that place. And if you look on Coho right now, it's I just wish that existed when I was 22. I mean, actually, for me, I was extremely lucky, but it could easily not have gone that way. And when I was going through Gumtree and Spare Room over a decade ago, I was literally having to hit and hope. And I landed on the place I did because the landlord just mentioned a little bit about the people. But actually being able to see something in their own words, I would really like that. And I think that there's a load of people that's kind of leaving university, looking at, do they get their first flat in a city that they've just moved to, that they don't really know anyone? And that they'll look at that and think, actually, this could be great for me. Mm. And I think when we can do that and stop saying it as, here's a place, it's a mile out of the city and it's cheap, I think that's when we'll really get the change. And that's what we're moving towards with Coho.
Brilliant. So what are the challenges do you see for the industry in the next 18 months?
Yeah, I mean, I think the council tax rebanding is an issue because ultimately it's just going back onto tenants, which does raise the rents. And although I believe we can raise the rents eventually, it's almost like you kind of want that money to be able to go back to the service provider and not just to the council, because that's making it so you can't add any value to the product off the back of it. So ultimately, it in my mind, it is taxing poorer people right now. And I think that's pretty rubbish. That's going to be a challenge to battle. I kind of think one of the challenges is us as an HMO community kind of, I think shunning is too hard a word, but making very clear that the rogue landlords aren't part of what we're doing. Like, there are always rogue people in any industry, and they're not the ones that represent HMOs. Because I think reputation is going to be quite key, because we are going to see an influx of tenants to shared living. Whether Coho does anything or not, whether anyone improves anything or not, there will be more tenants over the next year needing to do shared living. And as a result, we're going to see more newspaper articles of this horrible landlord's taken a family home and now there's 12 cars parked outside. There is going to be bad press coming off the back of it. And I think the challenge is how do we as a community keep looking forward and stopping that bad press, stop and being able to reinvest in the service that we have. Yeah, I mean, I imagine people can give you a much better answer to that than me. But
well, it's interesting to hear what you have to say. I mean, everybody has a different perspective. You know, most people would say inflation, property prices, interest rates, you know, these are all the big challenges. But actually what you've referred to is some of the more conceptual challenges about the concept of the HMO, about the you know, the issues about the sort of social challenges around what position HMOs have in society. Now, those are ongoing challenges, really. Since I've been investing in HMOs, when I first started, which was 25 years ago, my very first property was a shared house. It wasn't called an HMO then. It was a shared student house. And it was a bit grungy, to be honest. It was grungy and pretty awful. And when the students left for the summer, I gave it a very deep clean because it needed it. Yeah. But that wasn't really down to me as the landlord, it being grungy. It's because of the way they lived. And, yeah. You know, I've been in student HMOs that are very well maintained, and others which are, you know, grunge pits. And this one was a grunge pit, but I've also seen some amazing HMOs, some you know, lovely, beautifully refurbished properties, and have done some myself, of course. And I have a mixture of properties in my own portfolio, some of which are high end shared living, and some of which are more, what I would call perhaps more traditional HMOs. They're still a good standard. We very much believe in maintaining good standards because that's a key reason why people stay in a property. They might move in because they like the look of it and they like the people, yeah. But why do they stay? They stay because they get good value for money and it's a decent place to live and they're living with like-minded other people.
Exactly.
So no, it's good to hear what your thoughts are on it, Van, because you have a unique perspective. So I mean, it doesn't matter what other people think.
So there will be challenges to any individual landlord, and like, but in my mind, there is a need for HMOs, and it's a growing need. So to me, the challenges to HMOs isn't the actual necessarily on the ground things, because if you don't do it, someone else will, ultimately. And what I've heard from quite a few people, and I think this is the challenge that people are going to face, is that they can do a renovation, and by the time the tenants have moved in and started to move out, actually that property is now below the average standard of HMOs. Like, it is moving up quite quickly. So I'd say one of the challenges people face is, from a product and management perspective, is keeping up with the fast movement. Like, a lot of people that were in HMOs before, it was a little bit more of a kind of let and forget, I think, the mindset sort of thing. Like, put a property up, white walls, and let people go in and fine. And we're seeing a lot more energy coming into the sector, and people are coming in with new ideas, looking at the sort of customer experience, like, how do you keep them? I think it's Stuart Scott talking about that exact thing. Like, you can get people into a nice look, but you're not going to keep them. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to have that good experience. So how do you, as an individual investor or manager, how do you keep your part in the industry and keep moving forward? So the whole industry, I think, will still be around. Like, someone else will just overtake you. But how, the challenge is, how do you stay ahead?
If you want to, of course, there's lots of HMO landlords I know who are quite happy to have their vanilla white HMOs, because they bought them 20 years ago. They can charge £300 a month rent. There's always somebody who'll pay £300 a month rent. And it's a very vanilla, bog standard HMO, but it works. It still tackles part of the marketplace.
There is. So, I think the problem is, and I don't know if this is a tech mindset, but if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. I mean, if you look at inflation as well, like, if you're bog standard HMO was getting the average market rent at 300 5 years ago, and the average market rent is now 600, and you're sort of now at 350, essentially you've moved backwards in it. But I mean, if you're having that as a pension, you don't need to keep improving things. I agree there. But ultimately, if you don't, other people fill in above you and the average raises up, so you go down, so the tenant with the average rent now looks somewhere else.
I do hear what you say. I suppose I would disagree in this market, though, because I think we have such incredible demand. When we have less demand and more supply, that is the risk. But yeah. I've seen many HMO landlords who have very, very bog standard HMOs, and they do very, very nicely out of it. So yeah. I think there is room in the market for all types of HMO, frankly. I think it's great to promote high-end, well-run, good quality HMOs. But I think in any free market, we have to also accept there will be some at the lower end, and they also serve a purpose.
Well, yeah,
they're also important. If anything, just to give a sheer contrast to those of us who do provide a really good service. But it means that tenants have got more ability to negotiate, for example, on their rent. They've got more ability to choose. If they want to spend £300 a month on a rather grungy HMO, well, that's their choice. And as I say, there'll be some people who that is all they can afford, and they don't mind putting up with slightly lower standards. And I think that's a good thing, because I don't want to be in an industry where you have to, you know, the only choice you have is to pay £600 a month.
Yeah,
because that's a lot of money for a lot of people.
I think there has to be a good mix of high end, low end, mid end. I think my mindset with it is, you just have to do it mindfully. Like, if you literally just let them forget, you don't know where you are in the market. Like, maybe at some point you were middle and you're gradually slipping down. So I guess for me, it's you pick your position mindfully, essentially. Like, you know that you're occupying that part of the market, but if you think you're occupying this part, you blink for a minute and you're now down here and you're now down here. But I do agree that I can't see demand lowering.
No, absolutely. absolutely, which is always a good thing, isn't it? We want high demand indeed.
Yeah.
And we want high demand for your project as well with Coho. So hopefully, Van, you will, we will be able to get the links from you, and I'll put those in the show notes for today. So if anyone is interested in looking up, do you offer a trial, a free trial, or, you know, how can people try out the software?
So we have a full self-run demo. So you can just go onto Coho right now, click instant demo in the top right, and you can just click around as if it's one of your friends' properties. We don't always have all of the data in the right places as we add new features, but you can use the whole system as if it's yours. And then we can have our team show you through otherwise.
Great, yeah. Great. So if somebody is interested, that's how they'll going on the website. Yeah, best way to go on the website, have a look at the demo, and then contact the team and take it from there. So, Van, I'd like to really just finish by saying thank you so much for being here today. I know that you've been, you know, incredibly busy, and you're probably ready for a holiday after last Friday. But you and the team did a fantastic job, and we're really looking forward to the next awards, hopefully next year. And yeah, please do let us know, you know, how we can help on the podcast to promote and serve you. And I know there'll be people wanting to get in touch and have a chat with you and your team about your amazing software. So congratulations. It's been a great 2022. And I hope you have the next few weeks is a little bit quieter as we eventually head up to Christmas and you have a bit of time off.
Great. Thanks for having me on here.
You're welcome. Thank you, Van.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.